Sexy Voice and Robo, released by Viz Media. Price is $19.99, 400 pages, and rated for older teens. The following is a conversation between Jared Pine and Ed Chavez, reviewers from AnimeOnDVD.com, as they discuss this great new seinen title that has just recently been released. Let's join them now. Okay, so let's continue on the topic of Nico Hayashi.
Yeah, what I was going to say was Nico's such a unique character, something that you don't find in a lot of manga. She tends to listen a lot. Mm-hmm. She takes in what those around her gives her, and you know, her environment as well, and she tries to take it all in and just make her judgments that way. It's not all contrived like some other characters that you get to know. I mean, and what's unique about her is that in this short series you get to know that's her angle, and you actually get to know her through by doing this as she does this. And another short manga, you hardly get to know the characters, you hardly get to know what they are right, into or anything right. It's just rushed, and the focus is really the story and not exactly how the characters go about that story Kuroda does with Nico is, you know, you have to learn how Nico works. You have to learn how she feels right. at that time, and then the story like moves from there. Because at times it almost seems like ad hoc. She just kind of mm-hmm. Jumps to conclusions, and she ends up going back, you know, and starts to formulate things, and things just start to fall into place because she pays so much attention.
Right.
And it's not easy, even though, you know, it moves really quick.
Right.
But it's something that I found like really refreshing, because you can really relate
mm-hmm.
to her situations, because if you really care as much as Nico did, then you'd want to pay attention, you know? And, you know, it kind of gave you a sense of what she's feeling in these situations, you know.
Right.
For example, when she's at when she's talking to the kids by the circus, and she's trying to take in the emotions of being on the road all the time and not having the attachments, and she's then taking in the circus itself a little later, the excitement and the pressure at the same time. She can relate, you know, because it's something that she's going through at that time too, you know.
Right. So. And I think that kind of ties into something I always noticed and I really liked about her, is that she was totally just the believable 14-year-old girl who sort of has a lot of that sort of, you know, youthful vigor and naivete and all that, but she's sort of right on that cusp of entering mm-hmm. adulthood, and so she kind of can kind of start to see that, and it can understand.
Hold on a second.
Wow.
Sorry about that. My girlfriend just came back from work.
That's okay.
The beauty of podcasting, I guess. Oh yeah, go ahead.
So, yeah, I was just sort of her personality just really clicked. It just really felt like, yeah, this is, you know, a 14-year-old girl. I mean, just the way she sort of solves some of her cases, it's sort of like, you know, that's sort of a young, fearless kid jumping in to something unknown and not having that fear that the adult world will give you.
Right. Yeah, she just jumps feet first and she could be in danger, she could, you know, be risking her life.
Right.
Or it could be something completely meaningless sometimes. But she takes everything, you know, with the curiosity of a 14-year-old, as well as, you know, the professional attitude of a phone sex professional. You know?
Right. Which I always thought was just the two with her characters, that she seems to, like, it was kind of another thing about her, I keep seeing this whole thing about the, you know, the line between, you know, teenage years and adulthood, is like, she sees men in the adult way, how she interacts with them through the phone, and so she kind of understands all that, but she's still, like, I think she has, like, kind of a crush on Robo in a lot of ways, in some ways, maybe, but she doesn't really know what to do about it.
Right.
And that, did you see that? And her whole, that weird scene with the mob boss, where she just, you know, where she just kind of playing with him, saying, you know, she was interested in him and all that, or was she just being the awkward teenager?
Yeah, yeah. And then the way she kind of plays him, when she runs into one of the mob boss's old acquaintances.
Right.
You know, and tries to use him at his old game.
Right.
You know, you can tell that Kuroda is trying to make a situation where she is also kind of experimenting with her position and with her sexuality at that point too.
Right. Yeah. So I thought also one of my favorite sequences in the manga is towards the end, where she meets sort of the old spy who's like trying to retire peacefully, sort of playing the role of the senile, you know, old woman locked up in her house. And, you know, as she talks, you know, Nico sees completely through that cover. And this is sort of after sort of her whole kind of world is starting to get shaken. You know, she got in a little too deep with, you know, the main, one of the bigger cases. And now she's trying to get from the spy, you know, did you like it? Did you have any regrets? You know, why did you do it? And one of the best lines of the book is when the old woman looks at her and says, you know, sometimes it's your skills, not your will, that sets you on your path.
Right.
And to me, that was just sort of like, you know, again, this whole sort of line between teenager and adulthood, you know, when you're young, you have these just pure, innocent dreams of being something that was just like grand and perfect. And then as you get older, you sort of start to realize, you know, there's some dark underlying truths behind those dreams that maybe don't make it so perfect. And so you're going to have to make the choice to either continue on that dream or forge a new path or something. But that's also the whole thing, is like, you know, do you have, you know, control of your fate? Is this really what you want to do? Or is it just what you're good at and that's what you're led to do? I was kind of, I was just, when that hit, it was just, and then, you know, it's done on a full page panel. You just see her eyes just sort of in shock. Not shock, but it's just sort of like the truth hit home at that moment. And it's sort of like, I actually like got teary at that point, because I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like this 14-year-old girl just had her dreams almost, you know, she just got in knee deep. She just saw probably something she's going to scar the rest of her life, and now she's wanting to know about her, should she still hold on to her dreams of being a spy and all this? Now she's just like, ugh. And it just, it's kind of, you know, it kind of sets a tone for like kind of a depressing end of the book. But I thought the final chapter sort of shows her sort of choosing, well, I can still, you know, try to change the world and put in hope into people and all this. But yeah, that's just one of my favorite parts. That's definitely my favorite part of the book, was just that whole sequence.
Yeah, very, very telling coming of age type of moment right there, where you know, you can tell that that up to a point it was all about the excitement and just getting to do what her dreams were, you know. And yeah, you know, all of a sudden, she ends up realizing that it's not always going to turn out positively, and that people would will eventually end up using her, you know, and it's not going to be fun all the time, and it's not going to be exciting all the time either. And, you know, very, I think it was a very important time, you know, not, it wasn't just touching, but it was something very critical, because from that point on, I mean, there's still some more left to the story. Does she choose to go in a different path? Does she go the path of a, of a negotiator or a barber, you know?
Right.
Or does she, you know, keep on being the spy that she's wanted to be?
Right.
And obviously, you know, the best way would be for her to just continue. And I'm glad Kuroda decided to go that way, because I don't, I kind of wonder how I would see Nico in any other way, you know, especially considering the fact that, I mean, the old spy telling the young spy, you know, sometimes it's your talents, and her talents are so, I think they're wonderful, you know, they just, they can be applied in so many ways, you know, outside of, you know, the few that she has described.
Right.
And to see her take it out and try it one more time, to try to help out not just her own curiosity to see if it's worth it, but to try to help out Robo at the same time was kind of fun. Yeah.
What is up with Robo? He's just, I think it's just so funny how he seems like the younger one,
right,
of this odd couple. And it's just like he's just sort of he's poor, unemployed robot model otaku, just sitting around waiting for some dream girl to land on his doorstep or something. But he's just, he always kind of walks around with this sort of grin on his face, but he just cracks me up a lot of his interactions. But you know, he sees something in Nico, otherwise he wouldn't keep getting dragged along, even though she does trick him a few times. But maybe he's just sort of, you know, seeking the excitement that's missing in his life through her or something. But at the end, it provides a lot of great humorous moments, especially like the one when they were in the barbershop. With the guy, they're sitting on the chair. The guy crashes into the store. Right. He's just trying to like keep calm and he's cracking all these jokes. It's really funny.
You know, from my perspective, I don't think, you know, at first I thought Robo was just a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just there for comedic relief. But after that chapter, and then that last chapter with the watch, I think he is more aware of what's going on than he's supposed to lead on.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was really cool with under the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
With the unique situation at the barbershop.
Right.
But then also with this in the last chapter, he was actually doing a lot of the investigating. Like, he knew that he can talk to somebody, ask them about their history, and see, you know, what time they grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would, well, actually that goes back to the Mr. Forgetful chapter.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And he would ask him, you know, so did you play with this type of robot? Did you play with this other type of robot?
Mm-hmm.
So he can know like which era that person grew up in.
That's right.
And then in the last chapter, he was doing a lot of the conversation, you know, just trying to bring someone out of their own little fears.
Right.
And he was able to succeed, but it didn't work out the way, obviously, he would like. You know, because he ended up having to go home by himself.
Right.
So,
it's sort of a final chapter to sort of... It started off and I was thinking like, oh, so maybe they're not really going to wrap this up. Is this just going to keep, is this just going to sort of end after that, you know, because the chapter before it was just sort of her the great moment of her development with the, with the older spy. But then it just was, it ended up being this sort of like nice story that wraps up, and you know, you thought Robo was finally going to get the girl, and when she showed up and he got down on his knees and had the light shining from the bathroom auto. And even before that, you know, when he ends up following this mysterious woman in it who is actually Nico dressed in disguise, and he just, when he finds out, he just passes up, just you know, falls down on the bed.
That was Nico in her ultimate. That was Nico when you knew that she had resolved to stick to being a spy, full time.
And she she knows Mid at that point. You know, from all of her phone conversations, and she's like, "How can you guys be so naive?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's just gonna stick a couple lemons in my bra, and you guys can follow anything."
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, overall, just one of the better short titles that I've read in a while. I mean, you know, not a non-linear plot.
Mm-hmm.
Good character development in regards to Nico.
Right.
Lots of good humor. Just great little stories. You know, good little vignettes here and there.
Yeah.
And, you know, just
It's honestly the first time that I've been like this wrapped up in a two-volume manga. And at first I thought it was just going to be like a bunch of sort of solve this case kind of stories. But as it progressed, there's like little pieces kept building from each case until you got to like the main sort of case with Mr. Forgetful.
Mm-hmm.
And when you found out more about the old man and everything like that, and it just sort of, you know, all those little pieces from all those cases sort of just added to her development, and it just, it ended up in a great moment at the end. And so by the end, it just felt like you hadn't just read just this simple, like, two-volume manga. It was almost like you read this long, you know, story about this girl that, and it's just, it was kind of, it just felt sort of timeless just reading it.
I harp about this a lot at AOD, but this is one of the better examples of why I think seinen manga is so important.
That's what I mentioned in the review too. I was like, this is the type of story. People always think of it as sort of you know really gratuitous sex and violence type of stuff, but it's not. It's just more mature style of storytelling. Mm-hmm. That doesn't fit into like the normal formulas that work, that, you know, Japanese publishers know work well with shonen and shoujo manga. Mm-hmm. That is like, you know, stick this formula, you're going to have a hit kind of thing.
Right.
Where seinen, it definitely is all different, uses a lot of variety of techniques and stuff for the storytelling.
Yeah, the storytelling is very important, obviously very important to this title, because you don't just get Nico's story. You know, the basis of the foundation of the story as a whole is getting the stories from those she encounters.
Right.
You know, getting the stories of the old man and his you know, days as a rambunctious youth. You know, getting the stories at the barber shop. Getting the stories at the circus. You know. Getting the stories of Nicholas, you know.
Right.
All these stories end up creating, you know, Nico's story.
Right.
And, you know, it draws you in. It just draws you in because you want to get to know all these characters. And you want to know, you know, all the pieces to these puzzles. Just very,
and even the ones that just appeared in the one chapter, you know, it's just you know, the short-lived ones, even just they had depth to them, and it was just like, oh, what's their story? I'm really interested in their story. It was very interesting. What did you think of the brushstroke artwork?
You know, I think it's just. It would be underappreciated by a lot of people.
Right.
because, and the reason that I say that is, when you simply use inking, you completely have to just focus on the fact that whatever stroke you're going to do is going to cause texture, it's going to cause depth, balance, and there isn't a shred of tone work really to create depth. It's sometimes used in situations like on clothing or. Mm-hmm. Or like in the backgrounds, mm-hmm. Just on buildings and stuff. But we get so used to seeing mangaka just draw the outline, have the tone right there to create some form, and that's not present here. It's just all brush strokes. It's all
very
long,
natural feeling,
very free.
Yeah,
and. I like it a lot.
It really just started to sink in as more and more you go. It's just sort of. And did you read the afterword? At the end.
I don't recall it.
There was an interesting. I had trouble.
The one by Mark Weidenberg.
Yeah.
Weidenbaum.
Yeah. I had trouble getting sort of. It was on the tip of my tongue of how it was sort of making me feel, and he brought it, to my attention really well. Was that it was this, the way he presents Tokyo, mm-hmm. isn't this harsh, technology-filled city dominated by these tall, buildings or anything? It was more mm-hmm. of a European or older Japan that sort of showed, this is the true heart, of Japan. This is, the pure. This is what makes, or not Japan, Tokyo, but this is what makes Tokyo Japan. So this is what I like about it. It's just that was the thing. He even points out, at one point, Robo screams out in defense of his toys. These are the artifacts of Japan's inner life. He could just as well be speaking of manga, which is a great line.
Yeah, actually, that's a very good point because. While I was reading it, I kind of wondered, is this set in the, I can't say, in the 60s or anything, but it had this 80s type feel for a while.
Right.
Because, you saw the characters carrying around cell phones, and obviously those weren't small phones weren't around back then, but it just felt a lot closer.
Right.
It didn't feel really crowded. It just felt really personal. And, that's the Tokyo that you can see if you're walking around, and you really try to take in the town. Now, if you're just going to be there for a couple of days, and you really don't care to take in what Tokyo is about. I mean, Tokyo is this huge city,
right?
And really, it's only the downtown area around Shinjuku, around Akasaka, that are really with the huge skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere else, it's 2-3 story buildings, and then you have a lot of housing, and I mean, it just you don't see the people. It's kind of it's weird,
Mm-hmm.
You just see them in the middle of town, and you had a couple of those situations in which Nico herself, she's just walking around and she's complaining about having to hear all this stuff. She's kind of concerned about something, so she doesn't want to hear everything, but she's trained herself to listen so well. That's one of the few moments that it seems like you're in modern day Tokyo. Every other time, it's like this is the part of Tokyo that most people just don't get to see.
Right.
And it's you don't see it in manga too much either,
yeah.
Or anime for that matter.
Mm-mm.
And well, it's
no, a lot of times you see people sort of, you know, they're portraying of sort of, you know, what they don't like about like Tokyo, you know, or the people that are, you know, they're obsessed with technology. You know, you have the people obsessed with fashion and everything. And so they're painting, they're always portraying it very harshly to sort of make a statement. Where this guy, where here is sort of like he's embracing, you know, Tokyo is great. You know, this is what, it's very personable. This is what just makes me love Tokyo. And I mean, that's what I just noticed when I was reading it. I was just like, this isn't the same, this isn't what I'm used to when I'm reading stories that are set in Tokyo, for the most part.
Yeah. I think the only thing that can remind me of that, and I don't know if you read that, was Heartbroken Angels. That was in pulp, and it would constantly make fun of it was also a seinen manga, but done in panels, you know, three panel strips, and it was basically just satire and parodies, but Tokyo, when it was discussed, it was you know, they were slums, and they were they were the, you know, the perverted things, like like the phone clubs, and then they were the businessmen. But put them all together, and this is a melting pot of the culture of Japan, which is like most every other, you know, modern metropolitan city becoming, you know, more globalized too. It's becoming something that's, you know, not just Japanese. I think you can kind of get that type of feeling in this story, is that, you know, Tokyo isn't just the skyscrapers. It's this whole other entity that a lot of people just don't get to experience.
And that's the other thing too, is I mean. This story, I mean, it has, you know, prostitutes. It has, like, you know, the adult clubs. It has the yakuzas and everything. But it's embracing the personalities of Tokyo. We have all this, but this is what is Tokyo, and this is why we like this city, kind of thing.
Yeah. Or maybe he doesn't necessarily like it, but he takes pride in the fact that, the city is like this, but, you know, that's part of the charm. You know, that's what you get when you get Tokyo. Yeah. You don't just get, you know, Harajuku, you know, or a pretty place like Aoyama. You know, you get sleaze sometimes, and sometimes you just get, you know, haircuts in the park, you know, something really romantic.
That's right. So, definitely a great volume.
Yeah.
So you're a big Curry fan, right?
Yeah, huge Curry fan.
Okay. So if what kind of curry does Nico and Robo, sexy voice and Robo, eat?
I would think Nico would like Vermont curry.
Okay.
I think she would like something smooth with fruity honey texture. not, you know, just simple beef Vermont curry with I don't know, potatoes and carrots. I think Robo, being an otaku, would possibly go for something like maybe a sag paneer, just something completely out there. He's having some spinach curry with homemade cheese in it. You know, just totally out there. He wants the garlic naan with that. He might even, you know, want a mango lassi just to completely round it off. You know? He wouldn't go to Kokowa Ichiban. He'd have to go to, you know, a specialized Indian curry place.
Nice.
You know, possibly in possibly in Shinjuku, because you can find them around there right now. But he'll have to be treating, because Nico usually talks him into that.
Yeah.
So
nice. Well, I hope more people definitely check out this title, because it's definitely something special, and I think it's something that definitely should be found in probably every manga fan's shelf.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something, really, the material itself, even though it is rated for older teens, you know, there isn't, like, extreme violence or anything. I mean, it's, to be honest, it has less violence than some Shonen Jump titles. You know?
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any, well, there is that scene of nudity at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, you know, it's a pretty much a personal, you know, drama type of story. So, I think you know, even younger readers in their teens could appreciate something like this. Right. Something that would possibly
definitely seems across sort of all the demographics. I sort of thought
yeah, pretty
for the
much,
most part.
Except for, you know, the really young kids, but
right.
Definitely,
for, yeah. I think for like sort of definitely like the older teen,
mm-hmm.
and older crowd, sort of, you know, whether you lean towards shonen, shoujo, whatever, mm-hmm. it is, you're gonna definitely find something to really enjoy in this one.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it being a coming of age story is something I think would be appreciated by teens as well. So,
right.
Yeah. And adults. I mean.
Yeah. Well,
some of us are still growing up. I mean, Robo is still growing up.
You know? That's definitely what I enjoyed about it, as far as seeing it from the other side of the fence and everything. So, all right. Well, let's wrap this up then.
Yep. So that was the discussion, I guess, for Viz's Sexy Voice and Robo by Kuroda Iyo. It's one volume, 1999. It was originally released by Shogakukan and their bi-monthly magazine, Iki. It's a seinen magazine that was just released a few years back. It's kind of like their take on an alternative magazine.
Lots of interesting titles in Iki.
Yeah, lots
that I've seen.
Lots of you know. When Pulp came to an end for Viz, I noticed that quite a few of the artists that were from Shogakukan that were in Pulp started producing stuff for Iki. So it holds a special place in my heart, at least, because
right.
You know, not your standard seinen titles either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a little more edge to it, a little more maturity to it, which I really appreciate.
Definitely.